This episode is also brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. Sunday services on campus and online at 9 and 11 a.m. Learn more at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me? Welcome to the Now Hear This, Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Tyler Franke, and this is what's happening this week in our community. And then there were 7 out of the 8 who initially filed to run for the 3 open seats on the Canby City Council before last month's deadline. 7 were certified to be on the ballot for the November general election. The candidates will be incumbents Greg Parker, Sean Varwig, and Art Marine, along with newcomers Brad Clark, James Davis, Craig Lueling, and Herman Maldonado. Kara Hawkins, who had initially filed, withdrew prior to final certification. Also on the ballot seeking a new 2-year term will be incumbent Mayor Brian Hodson, who failed to draw an opponent for the 5th straight election cycle. Hodson has run unopposed since he initially won the seat from then-incumbent Randy Carson in 2012. Parker and Hodson are the 2 longest-serving elected officials on the Canby City Council, both having been first elected to the body in 2010, 2 years before Hodson successfully campaigned for mayor. Varwig, a local small business owner, was first elected to the council in 2018 and is seeking a second term. Marine, a longtime mortgage banker and civic organizer and volunteer, joined the board by appointment in April, replacing David Bajorin. The other candidates for the council seats include several familiar faces, including Jim Davis, who has served as chief of the Canby Fire District since 2014. Davis said he plans to retire from the fire service when his contract expires next June. The rest of the council field will include Wilsonville librarian and pastor Brad Clark and maintenance director Herman Maldonado, both of whom applied for the most recent vacancy on the board but were passed over in favor of Marine, and Craig Lueling. Lueling is a corporate executive and financial advisor who served on the city's original Urban Renewal Committee and Industrial Area Association. He also is a graduate of Canby High School and the University of Oregon. Canby City Council is composed of the mayor and 6 city councilors. The council meets regularly on the 1st and 3rd Wednesdays of the month. Qualified applicants must have been a resident of the city of Canby for the 12 months immediately preceding the appointment and must collect 50 signatures from registered Canby voters to be included on the ballot. Applicants must also be a current registered Oregon voter. Residents may also serve on a variety of city volunteer boards, committees, and commissions. For more information, visit the city's website at canbyoregon.gov. Lori Keckler was appointed to represent Oregon House District 52 at a virtual meeting Wednesday afternoon by Clackamas, Hood River, and Multnomah County Commissioners. Keckler, an adjunct professor for Southern New Hampshire University, a professional grant writer and nonprofit consultant, and a founder of the Women's March on Sandy, which was formed in 2017, came out ahead of her 2 fellow finalists, Dr. Kristen Dillon and Nick Walden Poublin. Pursuant to state law, the three finalists were selected by local Democratic Party officials to replace Representative Anna Williams, who resigned last month to accept a new role as Executive Director of Oregon's System of Care Advisory Council. Oregon law requires that the final decision on a legislative vacancy be made by county commissioners representing the district in which the vacancy exists. House District 52 includes voters in Clackamas, Hood River, and Multnomah counties. Keckler's service in the state capitol will be brief. When the new legislative districts take effect after the November election, Sandy will no longer be part of House District 52. HD 52 voters will instead choose between Democratic nominee Darcy Long and former state representative Jeff Helfrich. Keckler said she was overwhelmed to be appointed to the position, calling the act of serving her constituents in House District 52 an honor. Governor Kate Brown on Friday met with Bend police officers and first responders in the wake of the August 28th shooting at a Safeway grocery store that left three dead, including the suspected gunman, and sent shockwaves through the community and across the state. The shooting at the East Side Safeway in Bend occurred shortly after 7 p.m. that Saturday when 20-year-old Bend resident Ethan Blair Miller reportedly opened fire with an AR-15-style rifle in the store parking lot before entering the business. One victim, 84-year-old Glenn Edward Bennett of Bend, was gunned down at the Safeway entrance as he was leaving. Officers and medics with Bend Fire and Rescue rendered aid at the scene and later transported Bennett to a hospital, but sadly he did not survive his injuries. Inside, 66-year-old Safeway employee Donald Ray Surratt, Jr., also of Bend, reportedly engaged the shooter, attacking him with a knife and attempting to disarm him. Police say Surratt's heroic actions delayed the gunman and almost certainly saved lives, but they cost him his own. Surratt was fatally shot and died at the scene. Both men were Army veterans, with Bennett having served in the Korean War. Bend police officers arrived on scene within 2 to 3 minutes of the dispatched call, immediately entering the store and reportedly running toward the gunman as shots were still being fired. The shooter, who was also carrying a shotgun in addition to the assault rifle, died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Bend officers did not fire any shots. Two additional civilians sustained non-life-threatening injuries in the assault. The governor's visit on Friday, September 2nd, came as regional and state leaders offered condolences for the tragedy while also calling for action. "My heart goes out to the victims of this attack and their families," said Brown. "The entire Bend community has been shaken by this tragedy, and on behalf of the entire state, I am here to say we are with you as you grieve and heal." Brown, a Democrat, also took the opportunity of a written statement to lightly nudge the conversation toward actions that could be taken to curb gun violence as Oregon voters prepare to consider a ballot measure that would give the state among the nation's most restrictive gun laws. "Everyone has the right to be safe from gun violence," she said. "Every Oregonian should be able to go to grocery stores, to school, and to places of worship without fear of gun violence." Rinse out your steins and dust off your lederhosen. Oktoberfest is coming to Canby. Dubbed Fobtoberfest in honor of the event's main organizer and sponsor, FOB Taproom, Canby's first annual Oktoberfest celebration will take place from noon to 9 p.m. Saturday, September 17th at Way Park in downtown Canby. Though this will be Fobtoberfest's first time as a community event, the Taproom has hosted smaller iterations over the years. "We wanted to do something fun for the community and have a really authentic, organically grown Oktoberfest for us to share," FOB owner Steve Puga explained. A former professional in the world of supply chain logistics, Puga frequently traveled to Europe and fell in love with the beer scene in Deutschland. It's this love that fuels his passion for both the Taproom and the Fobtoberfest event. "Anybody who knows FOB knows we're about a genuine love of German beers," Puga said. "Just that feeling of walking into a German beer hall and it's kind of like Cheers. It's a community pub and everybody knows your name. That's the whole premise behind what we try to do every day." Puga said he was also inspired to broaden Foptoberfest into a larger community event because of this area's German heritage. In the pioneer days, a sizable contingent of first and second generation German immigrants settled in Cambie and the surrounding communities, and a number of families made their mark. Among them were the Nielands, who operated the Maple Corner restaurant in Cambie at the intersection of Northwest 1st Avenue and 1st Street in the 1920s and 30s. Matriarch Anna Louise Nieland inherited her love of cooking fine food from her father, German immigrant Hermann Hofs. The Cambie Evangelical Church on South Township Road, the only pre-1900 church still standing in town other than the Cambie Pioneer Chapel, was originally founded in 1894 as the German Evangelical Church. German was the official spoken language of the church until 1912. The prominent Kraxberger clan, another name you might have heard, which actually originated from neighboring Austria, was heavily invested in another originally German-speaking church, Maxburg Lutheran, where the language was the official one for services until 1929. After that, the services alternated between English and German for another 14 years. There's a lot of German history and German influence in this area, Puga said, and that was kind of paramount when my wife and I decided to buy this pub and transform it into what it is now, was just knowing about that German thread that runs through Cambie. Foptoberfest attendees will have no shortage of beers to choose from, with a menu of more than a dozen rare German beers carefully selected by Puga, and a ceremony Oktoberfest keg containing an exclusive brew that will be tapped at precisely noon to kick off the festivities. Bavarian-style bratwurst and pretzels, among other authentic flavors, will be on offer from Ebner's Custom Meats and Bee's Bake Shop, respectively, and the air will be filled with traditional German folk music and drinking songs, including a three-piece Oompa band. The tradition of Oktoberfest dates back to the largest and original Oktoberfest, a 16-day annual folk festival first held in Munich, Germany in 1810 to celebrate the wedding of Bavarian King Ludwig I and Princess Therese of Saxony-Hildburghausen. Nailed it. The beer fair and cultural festival draws more than 6 million visitors to Bavaria each year and has inspired numerous Oktoberfest celebrations in other cities that are modeled after the original Munich event, including the famed Mount Angel Oktoberfest, which is the largest of its kind in the Pacific Northwest. Due to a red flag heat warning issued by the National Weather Service and high risk fire conditions, PGE has advised they may be conducting public safety power shutoffs in the areas just outside Malala. City residents are not currently under threat of these shutoffs, but members of the greater Malala community may be affected. Rural areas surrounding Estacada, Oregon City, and Sandy, as well as along Highway 26 near Mount Hood, may also be impacted, according to the latest projections from PGE. The purpose of conducting public safety power shutoffs is to mitigate the risk of sparks that could cause wildfires in extremely dry conditions. High winds and other factors may be taken into account in performing shutoffs as well. PGE says these shutoffs are a last resort safety measure, and the agency relies on field observations by crews as well as information from local fire departments when deciding whether one is needed. If a shutoff is performed, PGE will work to minimize the number of customers affected and the amount of time they are without power. No shutoffs are currently scheduled, but you can stay up to date by visiting PGE's advisory page at portlandgeneral.com/PSPS.
On September 17th, join the FOB Tap Room and other local businesses in Cambie's first Oktoberfest, an authentic celebration of German food, beer, and culture. Enjoy over a dozen rare imported German beers carefully selected by FOB owner Steve Puga, including a ceremonial Oktoberfest keg that will be tapped for just this occasion. So be sure to come early and savor the flavors of Bavarian-style bratwurst and pretzels by Ebner's Custom Meats and Bee's Bake Shop, while the sounds of our live Oompa band and other German musical stylings transport you to another age. Don't miss this one-day-only event as we celebrate German food and culture while also honoring and remembering the spirit of the German pioneers and immigrants who helped build Cambie and forever left their mark on our community. You can find it only at Fobtoberfest from noon to 9 p.m. Saturday, September 17th at Waite Park in the heart of downtown Cambie. For more information, visit fobtaproom.com or find our event on Facebook. FOB Taproom, a place for all friends of beer.
I'm Roz Mason, Democratic candidate for Senate District 26. I'm deeply honored to announce I've also been endorsed by the Independent Party of Oregon. Next time, I'll talk inflation. Here's some context before my next ad. If the income distribution from 1947 to 1974 had held steady, regular people's income would be double today. Instead, income inequality exploded. The top 1% of Americans have taken $50 trillion from the bottom 90%. That's from the title of a Time magazine article you can find online. How did it happen? Wall Street finance deregulation, massive stock buybacks for executive salaries and shareholder profits, overtime rules and the right to unionize being chipped away, allowing mergers and acquisitions, so now a few companies have near monopolies. We can do better. Until next time, this was paid for by Mason for Oregon 21968.
All right, on the Cambie Conversation today, we are so excited to be welcoming back David D. Jones of Creatures of the Night and the Cambie Haunted House. Hi, David. How are you?
Hi, Tyler. I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
Awesome. I'm doing great. Thanks so much for asking. I'm always asking, and folks don't always reciprocate. No, I'm kidding. Tell us a little bit about Creatures of the Night, what you guys do, and how you got into it.
So, we're working with the Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center, and we've been working with them for 3 years, and it's an ecstatic and amazing collaboration. But Creatures of the Night started 9 years ago in the Mary S. Young Park in West Lynn, where we accidentally created an urban legend. We literally got into haunting as a lark, as a goof.
Yeah.
It wasn't for realsies. It was just us being silly. We entered a contest, and we discovered we were weirdly really good at this. So we continued, and we actually started studying and actually started doing research and kind of becoming better at it until now we actually teach classes at conventions around the country and around the world on elements of kind of what we do.
Yeah.
And one of the first things we tried to do is figure out how you make an urban legend. How do you get in people's heads? I even went back to school just to kind of figure out the nuts and bolts of what was more going on in the brain.
Yeah.
So the short version is we provide entertainment, we provide a haunted house, and we provide one of the only customizable haunted houses in the country where you can set your level of fear.
Mm-hmm. You started in Milwaukee, as you mentioned.
West Lynn, excuse me.
Had a first foray into Cambie and Clackamas County in the COVID years, when obviously operations like yours were really impacted by what you could do. Partnered with a few different outfits to put on the first drive-through at that time, Clackamas County Scare Fair, and then last year we're sort of solo in doing an experience at the fairgrounds. Talk to us just a little bit for folks that maybe weren't able to enjoy either of those years. What this collaboration has been like at Clackamas County, what you kind of done here, and then we'll obviously talk about what's coming up this year.
Okay, so 3 years ago, kind of the start of lockdown, when nobody could perform a haunt, most of the haunt owners, we started getting together online across the country and started to scramble to figure out how can you tell a story? How can you tell it safely? Mm. How can you tell it effectively? And literally from the South to the East Coast to the West, we were trying to figure out what's the most effective way of doing it.
Yeah.
So in the year when most people couldn't open a haunted house, we did two. The first one we did, we actually did the first drive-in interactive horror movie theater in Lake Oswego. Mm. And we did that at the end of summer. We did Night of the Living Dead. And we had, everyone was, you know, very, very safety. So even though we were acting together, the actors only interacted with people that they were enclosed with, enbubbled with. I don't,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So my daughters got to enact the stabbing of their mother for the, you know, one of the climactic scenes towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, family therapy. Yes. It takes many forms. So we, as we did that, then we immediately dropped, and we'd already agreed to work with the amazing people at the Davis Graveyard, Jeff and Chris Davis, and as well as Nightmare Factory and Fearlandia and the West Lynn Pumpkin Display, and all five haunts put on the drive-through, and it was a more, it was less immersive. It wasn't a deep theme story. We weren't hooking people. It literally was pure escapism.
Yeah.
The basic theme was, look, we all own a bunch of haunted house crap. That was our theme. Oh, look, here's stuff that can survive the elements. And we tried to put it together thematically and make something that at least coherently worked. And it was amazing. And that was, you know, during the 50 mile an hour winds and suddenly really cold, you know, evenings, you're standing there shivering, but the windows were open as cars were rolling by. And it was the sound of the children and the parents going, oh, ooh, look, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, for many of them, that was the first time they got out of the house.
Yeah.
This was the first family entertainment that happened outside their walls.
Yeah.
And so that...
Not on a screen.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And this, that was like our first feedback. That was our first kick of like, oh, you could feel kind of good happening and kind of resonating outwards.
Yeah. I couldn't help but laugh because that was, and anyone who experienced it that year, that was just a perfect description.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great. It was well done. But it kind of reminded me, we were talking before we turned on the recorder, you were talking about a meeting that you had just had earlier today with haunt operators from all over the world, a group that you're involved in, and how it's kind of interesting that there's not a lot of sort of competition or whatnot because there's such different types of storytellers. And that kind of reminded me of that event because you could see very distinctly and there wasn't necessarily like a hard break. Now we're entering Davis Graveyard. Now we're entering Creatures of the Night. But you could tell... You could tell, even, and you guys are all relatively local, but you could see the distinct styles, the distinct types of storytellers that each one of you were, the ways that you, you know, kind of operate artistically, even within that context.
Yeah, and it's one of the neat things about haunting or doing collaborative efforts in the Pacific Northwest is everyone shares. You know, no one's trying to be proprietary. We want everyone to see, look, no, this is how I do this.
Yeah.
Because we're radically different storytellers. So we could all start with the same idea, but the final product isn't going to look anything alike.
Yeah.
What the story we want to tell is going to be very different from someone else.
Yeah.
And it's just wonderful to get an opportunity to play. Cause that's what it is. We're adults who are getting permission to play with giant toys that are 12, 20 feet tall.
Yeah.
And we're allowed to, it's permission, and it's a hoot.
Last year, obviously, you know, back at Clackamas County, back in Canby, and collaborating again with Clackamas County, we were able to get out of our cars that year. So back to your more traditional roots of a sort of walkthrough haunted house type experience. Tell us a little bit about what that was like, how you kind of approached that storytelling. And one thing that I would love for you to kind of weave in there as well, that I always appreciate about your guys' kind of storytelling that I even remember from the drive-through year, kind of relying on folklore legends, even going back to like Greek mythology and things like that to really tell or really connect maybe with some folks who recognize those kinds of roots or things. But you sort of do little pieces of different types of lore in your storytelling, it seems.
Yes, and so...
But also tell a larger story,
So we're always dealing with basic fears. Humans, we have certain things we are scared of at all points in time throughout history. And however, the way those manifest are changed by time and geography. So the urban legends and local mythologies of Canby are different than those of the Midwest,
right,
are different than those of California, Utah. And the way that people respond to storytelling is radically different. So we all start with the same kind of basic fears. People are scared of spiders. People are scared of heights. There's a, and most haunts Well, if we can dive into this for a sec. So one of the things is, as we've spent the last 10 years researching Halloween and haunting, it gave us permission, because Halloween haunting seems to go back very old. It tends to go back tens of thousands of years.
Yeah.
And it seems specific to every culture on this planet. We almost as a species are driven to create a bower, a cave, and bring people in and say, these are the mysteries, to explain the other parts of life. And people going through a haunt is therapeutic. People go through it because when you come out of it, regardless of if it was hundreds of years ago, the 1970s when the JCs were doing it, or if you go through, you know, the Haunted Mansion, when you come out, you feel better. Mm. And the person you're with, you feel slightly more connected to the person you go with. The rule of comedy is always threes, but the rule of horror seems to be twos, being the two people who are together, and every haunt is the same. Two people, even if they're complete strangers, will grab onto each other in the dark and try to work their way through, or one of them will grab and force the person in front of them to become the meat shield.
Right.
But it's always two. It's
yeah.
That's the rule of haunting. But it's also that as well as the relationship with the monster, the character, the story.
Yeah.
And if you just do a collage of mad scientist, alien, classic monster, Godzilla, it doesn't resonate. You've got to have like a coherent story. It's got to be like a three-act play.
Yeah.
Or it's got to have a narrative. So that's what we try to put in. And you try to reflect. And so you started with, you know, universal stories that they get specific, but then you have to reflect the stories and fears of the people now.
Yeah.
So when we start writing the story in early spring or at the turn of the year, we're trying to guess what people are going to be scared of 10 months from now.
Yeah.
And if you want to, we can talk about what we did last year, but I think we're kind of going forward on this one.
Yeah.
So when we're trying to answer those questions, we're trying to figure out where people's heads are going to be. And so we're trying to find out what Clackamas can be. What are the stories here that are going to be resonant?
Yeah.
And so early this year, we interviewed all the haunt owners across the country and all the people who sold merchandise.
Are you going to talk about this year?
I can stop right now.
I just want to interject real quick before we get into it, because we haven't talked about this yet. I don't know what the story is beyond the name of it, which is Knock Knock, which I just love. Like, yeah. That is like such a like there's so much in the two words, one word repeated. But yeah, there's just so much, like even just there, I feel like you get a little tingle, right? Like,
yes. Yeah. All right. So, all right, let's go back to last year, because I guess that's a better setup to explaining
okay.
why we put all this effort in.
Yeah.
So last year, as we were looking at it, people were coming back, but even up until summer, nobody is, in terms of the entertainment industry and haunt, no one knew where the safety regulations were,
yeah.
what the protocols were going to be, and most importantly, what people's mindset was going to be come fall.
Yeah.
School was supposed to start for the first time in mm-hmm. person.
Yeah.
We were going in blind and we were guessing. So we followed the patterns, as you've seen, like after 9/11, if you take a look at all the shows that were released by CBS, NBC, ABC, they all had to do with water and mm-hmm. something in water, Lost, Surface. Water's a great metaphor for something being threatening, but you not knowing what.
Mm.
So we used that metaphor. And so we took local
stories. And again, localizing.
Yeah.
Canby's surrounded by rivers.
And it's surrounded by the rivers, and its identity is attached to this,
yeah.
the ferry.
Yeah.
So we took those elements. And so our story began on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And we then went through and took people, and you went underwater and you encountered monsters that were appropriate. In fact, some even kind of borrowed from local histories and mythologies. And we were trying to reflect those stories. We wanted very much to hit the train, but just that wasn't going to work for a metaphor.
Yeah.
But so you're always trying to reflect what the local story is, as well as kind of where everyone's head's going to be.
Mm.
So we executed. But it also had to be a lot less scary last year, because we didn't know what the protocols or safety. Everything had to be spaced out much farther apart.
Yeah.
Our actors had to be able to retreat farther. So it was a more open and distant, and I think our audiences were more forgiving and understanding as we were kind of transitioning in. This
yeah.
That wasn't the year to do the hard, get really in your face, because we didn't know.
Yeah.
So that wasn't the year to really lean into that, because for some people that would not just be anxiety producing, that would be traumatic, and they would then feel revulsion. And even though you're trying to scare people, the minute you make someone feel revulsion, they're never coming back.
Well, and I remember you now had made to, them avoidant. You had to space it out much more than maybe you normally would have, like, very okay, two can go through, like, wait, okay, now two more or whatever. Whereas I have had never been through one of your haunts before COVID, but everyone's been to haunted houses. It's usually a huge mass of people going through together, and it was very much not that last year.
And there's a a lesser told story in haunts called haunt crud. And in most haunts, you have adults, teenagers in confined, humid spaces filled with fog, breathing similar air. And by week two, everyone's got this horrible combination of cold and flu, and you start losing your actors and your staff. So we were trying to doubly not have that happen. So that was a lot of the part of the spacing. And this year there's still a little bit of that, but our, you know, the primary thing is to make sure that our guests are safe, our cast is safe, and the community benefits.
Hey, Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome. What's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something, Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local, independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read. Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay. Dude, I'm so excited. When this remodeling project is over, our studio is going to have a full arcade and hot tub. We can play Bubble Bobble with our hot tub bubbles on full blast. Just gotta finish downloading these blueprints and we'll be good to go.
Oh yeah, man, it's gonna be off the hey, wait a minute. The plans haven't even downloaded yet? How much time is left?
Not much. It looks like just about 14 hours.
14 hours? Dude, we're not building a skyscraper. It's just a one-room remodel. We have to have those plans today or we won't make our deadline.
This would not be a problem if somebody hadn't made us hit our data cap for the month by binge-watching the first 4 seasons of Drop Dead Diva last week.
Hey.
We have super slow download speeds anyway, and that just slowed us down even more because some providers reduce user speeds for going over their data limit.
Well, excuse me for being captivated by Brooke Elliott's perfect balance of heart and humor. I'm only human.
Man, let's just switch to Direct Link already. Then we would have unlimited data with upload speeds up to 10 times faster than our current provider. So we can download our plans in a snap, and you can keep binge-watching all your guilty pleasures.
Okay, I give. Please, call Direct Link and get us set up. I need that hot tub, and I do still have 2 seasons of Drop Dead Diva to watch.
For uploads and downloads at the speed of work, visit www.directlink.coop/internet or give them a call at 503-266-8111. Thank you.
So I love this. You started to tell the story, and I completely derailed you, and I apologize for that. But you, for this year, you reached out to local people, shop owners, longtime residents, to kind of get a inspiration, get a feel for the lore of this area, the kind of pulse of this area, and what our fears are.
And this is the year, again, we're still going a little soft. We'll get a lot more specific next year.
Yeah.
This was the year that it seems... For what everybody is hallmarking to nostalgia, this is the year of the nostalgic haunt across the country, across the world. Here in Portland and even in Canby, everyone for reasons, people are having a longing for the familiar, for what Halloween was. So like we're kind of distilling what haunted houses came from. And for most people, that was being a child and going to trick or treat.
Yeah.
So for most people, their first haunted house wasn't the full contact or Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right.
It was the neighbor who set up a couple pallets and one black light bulb that they bought from Spencer's.
Right.
Like that was most people's first haunted house,
right,
or the equivalent of, you know, putting your hand in a bowl and these are eyeballs,
right,
and these are, you know, intestines.
Right.
So we're trying to replicate that nostalgic old Halloween feel. So Knock Knock is Halloween throughout the ages. And so Halloween comes from so many cultures. And every culture has a variation of it. The ancient Romans had Panoma, which was a fall festival. That's actually where we get bobbing for apples. Most of the traditions, and weirdly, I'll go down a little bit. And it's a weird mixture of old Victorian and older practices for Halloween. So a lot of the things that we do in even Christmas are actually old kind of fall Halloweenish traditions. It just is. In fact, the telling of ghost stories, that's why, you know, one of the most famous was in the Victorian era was Charles Dickens.
Right.
This is the time to tell a ghost story. So Halloween's kind of a combination of all these. So we're telling Halloween through ancient Celtic times. We're telling Halloween through Victorian and castles. We're telling it through the 1950s and, you know, the bomb scares, the Red Scares, mutations, the movies that started coming out in the 1950s. Them was the first American kaiju. That's when Gojira, Godzilla came out.
Yeah.
This is when, like, across the planet, people started being, you know, giants started becoming the monster, even more so than Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And, you know, these larger than life giant city destroying creatures became the monsters in their head.
Yeah.
And then they became horrible, you know, and then they became the drive-in movie theaters that made teenagers giggle.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to reflect is that kind of feeling until we take it into modern days and make it a little more. We'll do an homage to the 70s and 80s. So we'll have our Chucky slasher film, Subtle Nod. We'll have our contemporary house to go through.
Yeah, yeah. Where is it going to be? I understand that you're geographically going to be in a different place in the fairgrounds, or?
We're still on the fairgrounds.
Okay.
We're at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center. We're not going to be on the main pavilion. We'll be in Horning Hall, but mostly we'll be in 4-H Hall.
Okay.
So 4-H Hall is where we'll be building, where we are currently building this huge city, this experience
of
where you will travel between different worlds.
Yeah. Is that a smaller footprint for than you were in last year?
Yes, but it's actually much more usable.
Okay.
I could get into the techniques, and no one will care.
Yeah.
But just the way the building's designed,
it's a large space. It's a large
huge
open space. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot we can do with that space. And with a haunt, you're always dealing with what's called expansion and contraction.
Yeah.
So you want people to feel claustrophobic, and then you want it to suddenly open up, and then you want to get them claustrophobic again.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of opportunity, especially with those beautiful tall ceilings and beams.
Yeah.
And you want to try to disorient them so they don't know where they are.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about kind of what the experience is going to like, sort of like the type of thrills or type of scares that people... Or that you're hoping people will experience.
No.
Why not?
Because that's the story. It's like the magician saying, first we're going to do this trick, then we're going to do the cigarette disappearing trick, then we're going to do the headless trick, then we're going to catch a bullet.
Yeah.
So it's, you kind of need to, you know, it's like a movie. You can have teasers and hints.
Yeah.
So you're going to meet our spider bride. You're going to meet our large crow Corvus. But how they tell their story is, you know, that's why you go to the movie.
That's a way to approach it, and something I want to ask you about, because your way that you approach the creatures and the volunteers and the folks that are doing the scaring, doing the haunting, is really interesting to me, and is really, you know, but prior to kind of knowing how you guys approach it, I would have just assumed you just, like, you know, grab somebody off the street, throw a mask on them, just jump at people, you know, and it's much more involved than that for you.
No, so, like, if somebody acts on the haunt, there is at least 2 months that they have to be working with us.
Yeah, they have backstory, and they're very involved in that.
There is a full character, so they have a history. Every monster is actually tragic. If you know, thinking of Frankenstein or anything, every monster was somebody who was on a hero's journey, which is what a haunt really is. A haunt is a hero's journey.
Yeah.
That the guest is the one. We're just creating the environment, but you're the hero of the story. The guest is the one. They're the one who has to fight the monsters. They have to figure their way out of the maze.
Yeah.
They're the ones who have to come back into the world of the living and, you know, have this new implicit knowledge that they can share or not. But that's, you know, the great storytelling. That was Empire Strikes Back. That's, King Arthur. That was everything.
Yeah.
So, where was I? I am so...
Yeah, no, I love it because I think what can be so terrifying...
Actors.
Yeah. What can be so terrifying as, especially a child or, you know, going through, is this feeling of... the monster, but that sort of otherness, that it's a creature that is just pure evil, right?
Relatable.
But having it be relatable, having there be a story and a connection there, I think does, in a good way, sort of, at least for a child, you know, sort of lower that fear a little bit, that it's not just something that you can't understand. It's not just something that is bad.
No.
Right?
So there's fear comes from three different parts. One, we are born with certain genetic fears.
Yeah.
There's certain ones we're all born with. Then there are ones that we develop episodically or because we're exposed to in media.
Right.
So ones from your personal experience or ones that we all collectively experience as a culture. After the movie Jaws, everyone was scared of sharks.
Right.
Not everyone had fought a shark, but suddenly everyone was fighting sharks.
Yeah.
But your personal life, you're going to have, and that's also reflecting local stories, you know, everybody knows that spooky house down the road. The kids locally will tell stories of that place.
Right.
That's what you constantly want to be reflecting. And so when you're an actor on Creatures, you have a full character that has a point, has a place in the story as it develops, and they have a history. The monster was something before they were a monster. They were a father. They were a daughter. They were a child. They were something.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them tragic. And that's kind of why we root for them sometimes. That's why we connect with them. And so also the child, too. Every child wants to be Godzilla or the Tyrannosaurus Rex or the vampire or the Hulk or Captain America. They want this larger of life to kind of figure out who they are.
Right.
So when we figured out and worked very hard that for certain points in the story, we will attempt to, in 1.5 seconds, we will evoke an existing fear that already exists in your head. We will try to create a relationship between the guest and the monster or the character. Then we have to create a question that they can't answer. And so that when you walk away, when you walk out, the thing that I want the most, and this is what I love, when children and adults or, you know, a group of people come out, I never want to hear is silence.
Yeah.
I want to hear them go, what was that thing?
Yeah.
What was the kid with
Did
the bike
handle?
Did
you see that part? Yeah.
Did you see that thing?
Yeah.
What was happening with this? And the parents and the children are excited and they're like, okay, but what did you think about that? That's, you know, families are going to get better. Relationships are going to get more solid because now they're exploring and talking about things that they may never have stumbled onto on their own.
Right.
So we're evoking that monster so that they can find out things about their relationship, who they are.
Yeah.
And it's kind of awesome. So in terms of the character development, and then you were asking about the second question was?
I think you hit it. I want to kind of go on that a little bit, because I imagine, you know, being one of the haunters or being somebody in one of your experiences on the scaring side, on the production side, that you know you have all these people coming through, hundreds of people, you know, a night, and you have to, and they're all at sort of different stages, and you have to sort of make these split decisions, right? Like, this is what I imagine to be, tell me if I'm wrong, but like, you know, you might have kids, or you might have, you know, adults who are just really scared and just sort of out of control scared, and maybe you want to tone them down a little bit. You might have some that are really scared, but that's where they want to be, right? And you just want to keep that going. And then you might have some that are just, maybe it's just sort of being too cool for school and sort of being, you know, like, nothing's going to scare me. Or
you're beautifully setting me up. And I thank you so inelegantly.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. So one of the things we learned is our job is to put people in a heightened state of anxiety at minimum. We want them head swiveling. We want them looking around and over their shoulder. When you do that, you are putting people close to fright, flight, freeze. All three are bad for a haunt. Having someone suddenly bolting and running, someone engaging in a fight or violence, or locking up and not moving. Right. All three are bad. So we want to keep below. So one of the things, we do a couple things to give control. One of them, on Saturdays from 7 to 8, we run Haunt Junior.
Yeah.
It is Haunted Mansion Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
It is for our age 12 and under guests and their families, for something magical, something engaging but not trauma causing. We don't want nightmares. We want conversations. We want them to be excited, inspired, and create their own legends, their own stories.
It is really cool. Yeah. We did it with our kids last year. And I think it does really speak to how thoughtfully and how sort of honest you are to what you've been saying in this interview as far as how you kind of approach. And it's not just about scaring the pants off people or whatnot, but the fact that you can make that pivot. It's the same, it's not a different place that you take, it's the exact same place, it's the same actors, they just, you know, are acting a little different, but it's within the same thing.
Instead of being savaged by a pack of werewolves, come meet the puppies,
right?
And it's meant to be playful. And then, even then, we've discovered that, you know, scaring the 16 to 70-year-old, people have different levels of expectations. So we have the creature candle, which is a magic shield, because you're the hero in the story, and every hero has a magic sword, a magic shield, something.
Yeah.
So we have the creature candle. So if you hold up the magic creature candle, it is a buffer. The scenes are different. The dialogue is different. The props that are activated are different. And more importantly, the monsters themselves are scared of you and will hide themselves and pull back. And you will see them pull back and repulse, because we always want you to be in control.
Yeah.
If you want to increase this, you know, your scare, you turn it off. Then we'll come back and get you. And we'll mostly go for what's in your head. I want to put things in your head that 6 months later you go, was that really, is that what happened?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, what? Because that's what the brain, the amygdala, the limbic system, the part of the fear that keeps cycling, it goes back to when it doesn't know why it got away.
Yeah.
That's part of the question. If it doesn't know why it escaped, that's the question that will come up again and again. And that's the thing we want to put inside people's head, which gives them a little, makes the world a little more mysterious, a little more interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, makes them feel a little braver.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, David, I love this. This has been great. Is there anything else that you want to share with people? And if not, I definitely want to give you a chance to let people know when the haunted house is going to be, where they can get tickets and get more information, all that good stuff.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is David D. Jones with Creatures of the Night talking for the Canby Haunted House. This year, we present Knock Knock with the Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center. Come see the most amazingly ghouls, ghosts, and shambling horrors of Halloween and trick-or-treating throughout the ages. Halloween has never been scarier. And remember, it's okay to take candy from strangers on Halloween. Come to the only customizable haunted experience in the greater Willamette Valley area. You can control your fear using the creature candle. 7 to 8 on Saturdays is our Haunt Junior. After that, it's your own risk. Please go to canbyhaunt.com or creatureshaunt.com to get tickets and find out more information, as well as additional showtimes and performances. We look forward to scaring you soon.
Wow, that was made, and that was not written out at all. That was just completely off the cuff. Like,
yeah. We do this a lot.
They don't know.
Okay. I'm not going to tell Wally with the cue cards. No, the man gets paid way too much.
Oh,
he's good. He's a professional.
He's a professional cue card guy. David, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tyler. Yeah. Always a pleasure. And just thank you for opening your door and your hearts to us.
Of course. Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This, Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This, Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.